Ashley.
Hey, Josh.
Here we are, our first bonus episode of the mysterious and unbelievable case of the Bat Boy and the Hot Dogs.
It's really great to be back in the podcast studio. I think I missed it.
One of the things we promised at the end of our last episode was that we would update our listeners about minor league contraction. That was the subject of our fourth episode. But Ashley, why don't you give them a quick refresh on the subject?
Sure. So about a year ago, Major League Baseball announced plans to eliminate 40 teams from the lowest levels of the minor leagues. These are guys that would usually start out in rookie leagues and low A ball, and they wanted to put them in a developmental type league in Florida or Arizona. Burlington was on the list of teams to be eliminated. Pretty much the entire Appalachian League was going to get cut.
When we recorded episode 4, there was still a lot of uncertainty about it all, but now we know.
Yeah, that's right. And here's how former major leaguer slash TV personality Harold Reynolds broke the news.
Hey, everyone, I'm Harold Reynolds. And you know what? Being a former Major League All-Star player, there is a pathway to the big leagues for every player. That's why I'm so excited about what's happening here in the new Appy League. I say new because this is a college wood bat league. Now, here's the difference between what you've been having in the minor leagues in A-ball compared to what you're going to get now with these players that are freshmen and sophomore up-and-coming stars out of college baseball. Now, for example, coming through the Appy League, you probably had maybe 5 or 6 guys in the last 10 years on your club maybe make it to the big leagues. Well, what baseball's done now is streamlining the players so much, there's going to be 300 players coming to this league. And of those 300 players, there are probably about 150 of them will someday be in the big leagues. That's how streamlined this will be, and that's the type of talent you'll get. This is going to be exciting. It's going to be great for your community. It's going to be great for your league. And more importantly, it's going to be great for baseball. How cool is it that baseball will be staying in the Appy League?
Ashley, what were your first thoughts on hearing that big news?
I was really glad to hear that baseball was going to live on in Burlington, to be honest.
Nice. It's definitely sad that Burlington will no longer have an affiliation with a Major League Baseball team, but I'm excited that Burlington really gets to develop its own team now with its own team name and own identity, and I can't wait to see what name they pick out for it.
In episode 4, we talked to Ryan Kerr. He's the new owner of the Burlington team, and he bought it in March of 2020 amid all of the uncertainty about contraction. He didn't know if he was getting a minor league team for the Royals, a semi-pro team, an independent team, or what.
But Ryan knew baseball would work in some form in Burlington. He was with the Burlington Royals front office from 2011 to 2016, and he was the Appalachian League Executive of the Year in 2014, 2015, and 2016. He loves the town of Burlington, and he knows that folks there support baseball.
And he's definitely excited about this plan for the Appy League. As you'll hear, he's also wanting some ideas for what the team name should be.
So Ryan, welcome back to the podcast.
Awesome. Thanks for having me back.
So our listeners will remember in episode 4 when you talked with us, that we talked at that time about the status of minor league contraction and what the future may hold for baseball in Burlington. And the news is out now that the Appalachian League is going to be a wood bat college league. So it's officially outside the minor league system. But I know USA Baseball is going to be involved. So what can you tell us about who USA Baseball is and what you're looking forward to about this new league?
Yeah, we're unbelievably excited about the opportunity to remain in the Appalachian League under a somewhat different format, but continue our alignment with Major League Baseball and USA Baseball. And yeah, when we acquired the club back in March, we knew that change was probably impending for the entire minor league, major league relationship. And the way that Major League Baseball teams were going to look at, you know, utilizing their minor leagues moving forward. And so we're excited about this opportunity, this venture with USA Baseball. It brings some really unique opportunities for us specifically in Burlington, just because of the proximity to Cary, North Carolina, where the USA Baseball headquarters is located. And they're the primary primary development team for the national teams that are competing in the Olympics, that are competing on a global scale all around the world. And we're really excited to be aligned with them and also to keep our partnership with Major League Baseball. And although we're not aligned with the Indians or the Royals or one team in particular, we see this as a great alignment to all 30 clubs. And this is a great way for them to centralize data for all 30 of those teams to see the best and brightest prospects and have them utilized in the Appalachian League. And for our local fans and our local community, they're going to get to see unbelievable baseball. They're going to get to probably see better quality of baseball than we're accustomed to over the last 35 years. And they'll get to see guys that are in the major leagues at some point within the next 4 or 5 years after they come through in Burlington.
So Ryan, you kind of touched on my next question about, fans in Burlington, are always excited to see, the next crop of future major leaguers, which is great to hear, that they can still count on seeing those guys come through. But my question for you is, wooden bat college leagues have existed, in various places across the country. How is this one going to be different from something like a Cape Cod League or a Coastal Plain League?
Yeah, I think some of the differences that it has specifically is the facilities. There's great facilities in all 10 of these local markets. It's a league that's already been together, dating back to the 19, I believe, is when the Appalachian League started in so many various markets. And then it really is the alignment with USA Baseball and Major League Baseball. And having a steering committee that exists with some of the best programs, best coaches throughout the college space, but then also scouting directors, assistant general managers from Major League Baseball. There aren't many other summer college wood bat leagues that have that sort of backing and those sort of resources. And so I think the way that we've aligned, the way that the Appalachian League saw this as a great natural fit for all of our 10 communities, but also in the grander scheme of baseball, as the game continues to evolve and continues to grow, this is a great way for us to grow each of our individual 10 markets. And the fact that it's part of this one baseball world that's really being developed right now is, how do we control the player's journey from the moment that they're in Little League until they get recruited to hopefully go play college ball, to then their summer college circuit? How are they getting recognized, scouted, developed until they hopefully make it to the major leagues? And all these evolutions in technology and the way that the game's growing and so fast, they saw great response in Burlington specifically and all 10 communities, and wanted to make sure that they kept utilizing these facilities and these markets to better and grow the game of baseball.
So Burlington, the Appalachian League, has been a historically a short season summer league, 60-ish games or so. How long of a season will this new league be, and when do you expect it to start?
Yep. So we'll start here in 2021. That'll be a 54-game season that starts June 2nd or June 3rd, I believe, opening night should be, depending on which market you're in. And the season will end around August 10th. During that season, there will be an Appalachian League All-Star Game, which is brand new this year, which there's been conversations about that being played on MLB Network, as well as then the championship series will also be recorded and played on MLB Network. So some really exciting opportunities with that alignment with MLB and them owning their own network to gain exposure for the local markets and all the players and the like.
Nice. And now, how will players be assigned, and will there be any sort of draft day festivities or player meet and greets leading up to the first game of the season?
Absolutely. So the players will all be assigned through USA Baseball. USA Baseball is acting as the farm directors here, essentially, from what we are accustomed to. They're out there actively recruiting and trying to retain some of the best up-and-coming prospects in the 2021, 2022, and 2023 drafts. And they're going to be recruiting about 350 to 400 players that will then be assigned to each of the local teams. We expect the players to arrive a couple days before the season starts, and we're currently working on our own fan fest, which would be the first opportunity for our community to meet the new set of Burlington baseball players.
Excellent. Now I know these are, to be clear, anticipating the top college freshman and sophomore baseball players across the country, correct?
Correct. And as we talked a little bit about just how Major League Baseball is looking to really control that player's journey, summer college ball has been, you know, fairly transitional in terms of the way that players are going. There's no true clear path, especially at the freshman and sophomore level. The top juniors typically will end up in the Cape Cod League, but there really hadn't been a true pathway for the best freshmen, the best sophomores, whether they end up in the Northwoods League or the NECBL or the Coastal Plain League. There were so many different options. And so for Major League Baseball and USA Baseball, and then in conjunction with the Appalachian League, I think there's a real goal to try and get those best prospects into the Appalachian League, into that system, and then, you know, to the Cape Cod League, and then hopefully drafted by a major league team, and then working their way up the minor league ladder.
And if the let's say a college freshman comes to Burlington and plays with Burlington after that freshman summer, and he returns to the league the following year, does Burlington get first crack at that player, or does he get just reassigned that next summer?
Yeah, I don't know exactly how that would work out. A lot of that comes down to player requests as well as what they see the best pathway for development for that player. We would anticipate, yeah, we may have some repeat players from freshman to sophomore year that come through, especially, you know, ones that really enjoy it, that seem to enjoy coming to Burlington for the summer, or kids that are fairly local. And that's one of the biggest pluses that we see is our just geographical location and proximity to, you know, the Elon, Duke, UNC, NC State, Wake Forest, NC Central, you know, UNC Wilmington at the coast. There's unbelievable baseball within our region. And now getting to see some of essentially a dream team of local players that could come to the market. And then you add in some of the best players from UCLA and Vanderbilt and SEC teams. And it's going to be really impressive what can be done. And for us primarily, we love the idea of being able to have some local flair and local ties to the team.
Yeah, and let's talk about one of the things I'm most excited about, which is the new name and potential great, unique merchandise that we can pick up and wear and support the home team that is hopefully unlike sort of anything else out there. Is there a name set? How does that process work?
No, so it's actually funny you ask. We just today here, we launched a name the team idea contest where we're trying to gain ideas from the local community. We're trying to get as involved as possible. We want to hear from the community. We want to hear, you know, what sort of name they want. Do they want something wacky and crazy, or do they want something that really embodies, you know, the rich history in Burlington? Are they looking to focus on Alamance County as a greater whole? Where do they want to see this go? Is it a combination of both those things? And the glorious thing about minor league baseball is the ability to build these unique identities that have the opportunity to not just gain, you know, local buzz, but regional, national, and potential global notoriety for our local community. And so when we're looking at this process, we really want to engage the community. They can go onto our website and submit their names and what Burlington baseball means to people. And this is going to be a fun project. I'm glad to hear that you're excited about it, because we're unbelievably excited about it. To have spent 35 years as the Indians and as the Royals with great partnerships with both of those major league organizations, but to then take on the name of those parent club didn't really allow us to build our own true identity system. And having something unique that is what's Burlington's all about, we're excited about the process and the opportunity to do it. So you guys got the names?
Yeah, so Ashley and I have been texting furiously back and forth, and you may want to just close down the contest after you hear these. Because we might have a winner in here. And I will warn you, they go progressively from good to awful. So
hey, well, hold on now.
All right. So one of the ones I thought of in honor of the man who helped bring baseball back to the Burlington area in 1986, it could be the Wolves.
Okay.
In honor of Mr. Miles Wolf. Another idea I had, and to sort of honor the rich railroad history that kind of gave rise to the area when it was known as Company Shops, was the Spikes. But then I did a little internet research and found that that's taken by a team up in Pennsylvania.
Yep.
Right. College. Yep. So I suggested Trax, T-R-A-X-X.
I like the double X.
Yeah, I told Ashley when he sent me that was a good one.
Yeah, that is a good one.
So, some textile thoughts. You could be the looms or the spinners. I didn't see anybody using those out there.
Okay.
And then this is where it sort of went completely off the rails, sticking with railroad tradition there. We were moving on to the medical testing industry, which is huge in Alamance County and Burlington. Our listeners may know that if you get blood drawn and it's sent off to a lab, the great majority of those tests are sent to Burlington. So we were thinking the plasma or the platelets.
I'm glad you went that way and not vampires or something.
I did also suggest the finger sticks or the centrifuge. Drawing no response there. And then Ashley came up along those lines. I think my favorite one of all of these, and this is where you may want to close down the contest after you hear this. Go ahead, Ash.
The hemogoblins.
Hemogoblins. That one's going to look pretty interesting going across the jersey. You're going to need some wide body first baseman.
That's right.
I'm just looking forward to the mascot for that one.
I love it. I mean, those are great. And yeah, we just talk about the history, and those are the sort of names, right? Those are just fun and unique. And they talk a little bit to the history, you know, as the everything we keep hearing and seeing is, you know, the way that Burlington has always continued to be successful, and the resiliency and the tenacity that Burlington stands for, and the way that it's evolved from, you know, a community that was built around the railroad to then the way that it's adapted and has, you know, created national awareness for its textiles, and the way that it was, you know, the first creator of plaid, right? The Alamance famous plaid, to then now how we evolve in the biomedical space. And it's a community that continues to grow and continues to thrive and succeed with everything that's thrown at it. And so, yeah, I think you guys hit the nail on the head with trying to find some names that embody, you know, the history and then also look forward towards the future.
We will continue to send you some, and as long as you don't block our text, we'll keep sending them.
I appreciate that, and please do.
So, Ashley, do you think they'll actually pick the name Hemogoblins?
If they don't, I think it's a missed opportunity.
For our listeners, if any of you have ideas for a great new team name for the Burlington team, Ryan and his staff would love to hear from you. Just Google Burlington Name the Team, and you'll find a link to the contest. We'll also put a link on our Facebook page and up on our website.
But let's be honest, Hemogoblins is going to win.
Let's switch gears for a little bit. Hearing from Ryan and from Harold Reynolds about all the future stars who are going to come through. You know, Burlington's definitely gotten used to that over the years. There have been a lot of great players to come through there.
Yeah, absolutely. Like Gene Conley. He played in Burlington in the 60s before the team moved away and then came back. He was a four-time Major League All-Star, and he's only one of two people to win championships in two of the four major sports. He won a World Series with the Milwaukee Braves and then three NBA championships with the Celtics.
That is impressive. Another great player to have come through Burlington is Chris Archer, who is currently with the Pittsburgh Pirates, but he broke into the big leagues with the Rays. He pitched in Burlington in 2006, and here's a fun fact. Archer is the last remaining Burlington Indian in the major leagues.
Okay, but our top five starts with Bartolo Colon. Big Sexy.
Big Sexy.
He's a four-time Major League All-Star. He won a Cy Young Award. He has the most career wins by a Latin American-born pitcher. And he was with the Burlington Indians in 1994.
At number four is Manny Ramirez, a 12-time Major League All-Star, two-time World Series champion, World Series MVP, put up a .312 career batting average. He's a member of the Boston Red Sox Hall of Fame. And as we mentioned in our final episode of the podcast, he was with the 1991 Burlington Indians.
Okay, coming in at number three is Louis Tiant. He's a three-time Major League All-Star. He led the American League in ERA twice. He's also a member of the Red Sox Hall of Fame. He played in Burlington back in 1963. I think he was also in an episode of Cheers.
And don't forget, he was mentioned in Bad News Bears breaking training. The kid Carmen, their pitcher, he loved him some Louis Tiant.
But that movie was nowhere near as good as the original.
I don't dispute that one at all, but it did have the Astrodome, which I liked. At number two, we've got CC Sabathia. CC played 19 seasons in the majors. He was a six-time All-Star. He won a Cy Young and led the league in wins twice. He was a World Series champ, and he won more games across the 2000s and 2010s than any other major league pitcher. And CC was a member of the 1998 Burlington Indians.
That is impressive. I had no idea he won that many games in the 2000s.
Ashley, you want to reveal who we've got at number one?
Yeah, and this should really be no surprise to anyone that we've got Jim Thome at number one. He played 22 seasons in the majors. He hit 612 home runs, and he was a five-time All-Star. He was also a first ballot Hall of Famer.
Listeners, we'd love to hear from you on that list. If there are others you think we forgot or should have put in the top five, drop us a line at thebatboyandthehotdogs@gmail.com. Again, that's thebatboyandthehotdogs@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you.
Okay, can we take a break for a second? Because I've got to write an email right now.
You've got someone to add to the list?
Yeah, probably, you know, let's say number six. I think Arnie Olin really should be on the list.
Yes, the great, albeit fictional, Arnie Olin.
All right. So can we get back to the subject of potential team names for the new Burlington team?
Sure.
All right. Well, there's one name that I really hope they don't pick because I just can't say it for some reason.
I know exactly the one you're talking about. Back in episode one, when we introduced Dave Keller, the manager, we talked about his playing career and how he hung up his spikes with a minor league team in Tampa.
Right. And I was supposed to say the actual name of that team, and I had the name right in front of me. Well, you can hear what happened next.
Tarpon. Okay. What the hell's a tarpon?
It's a large fish of the genus Megalops.
Okay.
It's native to the Atlantic.
Interesting. All right. All right. We know now that he was drafted by the Cincinnati Reds in the 28th round back in 1982. He's a member of the University of Northern Colorado's Hall of Fame for baseball and basketball. He played several seasons in the minors in the Reds organization, and when he hung up his spikes for the Tampa Tarpons one season, we may have to rename the team.
Yeah, just say you can say Tampa's minor league team. Yeah.
All right.
You say he played several seasons.
Yep. Let me get it back under control. Yeah. All right. He played several.
And this is where it goes off the rails.
All right. All right. I can do it.
Do it.
I'm pretty sure I can.
I'll take it. You gather yourself. You come up with, and Coach Keller had a rule, and then you can pick back up with one can imagine. We know now, though, that Coach Keller was drafted by the Cincinnati Reds in the 28th round back in 1982. He's a member of the University of Northern Colorado Hall of Fame for baseball and basketball. He played several seasons in the minors in the Reds organization, and when he hung up his spikes for the Tampa Tarpons. Save these for bonus episode. Oh, my gosh. And there was, you know, to be perfectly honest, there was another name that tripped me up.
Oh, yes. Yes, there was.
You'll hear about all of that and more on the next and final episode of The Unbelievable Case. No, I can't. All these episodes, I can't even remember the freaking name. You'll hear about all of that and more on the next and final episode of The Unbelievable and Mysterious Case of the Bat Boy and the Hot Dogs. Actually, let's try. When I say next, you jump in with and final.
Okay.
You'll hear all that and more on the next episode. Okay. You'll hear about all of that and more on the next
and final
episode of The Unbelievable and Mysterious Case. No, I got it backwards. Wait, what's the name of our podcast?
The Mysterious and Unbelievable Case.
Jesus.
It is backwards.
I got it backwards earlier, too. Oh, my God. Yeah, we got to go back up earlier. All right. I can't believe I did that.
I didn't even notice. So that's it for our first bonus episode. If the pandemic ever ends, Josh and I have road trips planned to go meet with Tony Tillman, the Snake, and to Pennsylvania. We've got a standing invitation from the Monastero family to come up for a big Italian dinner. There will definitely be an episode or two to come out of that one.
I am so looking forward to that one. If you enjoyed this, as well as our other episodes, please rate us, talk us up on social media, and tell a friend. Give us a like on Facebook and check us out on Instagram at The Bat Boy and the Hot Dogs.
And as always, give some love to the band Cabinet. You can find them online at cabinetmusic.com or on Instagram at Cabinet Music. They've continued to put out great music even during the pandemic, like this one called Wheels.
Be safe, everybody. Wear a mask. Oh, and Jim Tomey, if you're listening, please call us.
And it can play you just the same. I gotta keep rolling, buddy, rolling down that easy lane. Spinning round and round, the shiny side up with the dirty side down, the shiny side up with the dirty side down.